We've just had a little stop to turn off the phone. So you were telling me about your meeting at Canberra.
Yeah, there was a group of us there, and we asked, when can we take the Mungo man, bring the Mungo man back? And on that day they said he wasn't ready to come back. We had to get things in place back at Mungo, see, for keeping place and that for him.
And then they finally did bring him back, and that was a great journey, wasn't it? A few of the others on your committee went in a bus. And can you just tell us about their journey, what you know of it, from Canberra back to Mungo?
Yeah, there was a group of them off on the committee, the advisory committee, and a couple others went down to travel back with the Mungo man. And they stopped in places and had a smoking ceremony, and as they were bringing him through, you know, towns and that. And
they went through Balranald.
Came through Balranald and...
And Hay?
And, yeah, Hay and Balranald, and then from there to Mungo then, and we was all out at Mungo, the big, big crowd, big group of us, was there waiting for him to arrive, and we couldn't believe it when we seen the black car coming in, you know.
Everybody. Can you describe what that black car looked like?
Oh, it was, everybody was happy to see that black car coming in, you know, and we knew it was him coming home.
And it was a big old...
yes, one of the...
hearse, Chrysler hearse.
Yeah.
And had been used for Aboriginal funerals in Victoria, hadn't it?
In Victoria, yeah.
Mm. And it had been given to the museum, and the museum kindly fixed it all up and painted it up. And do you remember what they had on the number plate?
Mungo Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mungo One.
Mungo One, yeah.
They wanted to have Mungo Man, but they...
Mungo One,
it was too long, so they went... So it was... how did you feel when you saw that... when you saw that hearse arrive?
Oh, we was happy and sad, you know. To see it pulled up in the front of us. We all sat along and we all stood. Yeah. When he pulled up in the front of us, the car, yeah.
And there was great ceremony, wasn't there? Can you tell me about some of the things that happened?
Yeah, there was a lot of them made a speech, you know, at the group, and we had a smoking ceremony, yeah.
And there was dancing?
Dancing, yeah. Mm.
And what are the three main groups that speak for that territory?
The Barkanyi tribe, Mati Mati, and the Niyampa.
And which one are you from?
I'm from the Niyampa.
And if you were telling your... You've got some beautiful great-grandchildren as well as grandchildren, but if you were telling your great-great-grandchildren in 50 years' time about that day, what would you say was the best thing about the day for you?
I'd be telling them that the Mungo man is one of the oldest remains to be found in Australia, you know. And after being taken from his homeland, he's back home again after 40 years.
40,000 years.
Sorry,
40 years
in
Canberra. In
Canberra.
Yeah.
He's back home again, and we're so happy that he is back home.
Why do you think it's good to have him back home?
Well, that is his resting place, and he's with the rest of, you know, ancestors.
And do you think when you're at Mungo National Park, how does it make you feel?
Well, I like going to Mungo. I feel very relaxed and ease. Yeah.
And what was the highlight of that day for you?
Oh, I was overjoyed, you know, happy to have him back on his own country.
And then after the ceremony, there was another big event on in Mildura, a Welcome Home to Mungo Man repatriation concert, and in November last year. Can you tell me what happened that night?
Oh, there was a big celebration, you know. Everybody was happy, and it was good that a lot of people from all around Australia and other tribes come and shared it with us. It was happy. It was a happy night to see how many people was there.
And what was your favourite part of the evening?
Even a lot of people from other parts of the country and even from overseas, we had some people, you know, and to see and hear that they were sharing what we was all sharing together, you know, joy.
Great joy.
Great.
And when I spoke to you last, I spoke to you before the ceremony and before the big concert. You were telling me about your family story, and you're saying that your great-grandmother, your grandmother and mother, Grace Taylor, Nee King, lived at the mission at Carrara Tank near Ivanhoe in western, far western New South Wales. Did your mum tell you anything about what life was like at that mission?
Yes, yeah, she did say it was very hard for them, but, you know, they was happy. They was all together, all the family, all of their siblings, sisters and brothers.
And were there mainly Nyampa people there, or were there people, other tribes?
There was other people there.
And did she go to school there? Did they have a school there?
Yeah, they had a school at Carrara Tank, yeah.
And someone else who was there at the same time was Tibby Breyer, and she was one of the women that fought to have Mungo Lady back.
Yes.
I read a story that was in the Canberra Times many years ago in the 1980s, because she's sadly died since then. And she said her people believe that the King Man, Geordie Murray, used some sort of magic to dry up the tank, the Carrara tank, which was a big tank in the ground, not above the ground like most tanks, after his daughter was taken away by the Aboriginal Protection Board. Have you heard that story?
Well, I did hear that the tank did dry up, and that's why was the reason they was all moved to Menindee Mission.
And what did you know about your grandfather? Did you know any... Who else was there? Your great-grandmother, your grandfather? Who were they?
My grandfather was Jack King, yeah.
Jack King. And who was Jack King?
He was my mum's dad. And he also was a clever man.
So what do you mean by a clever man?
Well, he along with Geordie Murray, they shared in a lot of things, you know, so, and from what I've been told, him and George Kennedy, George Murray, was the two clever men.
So were they kind of magical people?
Yeah, magical people. Yeah.
What sort of magic could they do?
Well, you know, I haven't been told what they used to do. You know, but all I was told that there was magical.
Could do special things,
yeah.
So in those days, were people scared of clever men, or just a bit wary of them?
They probably was a bit wary of them, you know. They all lived together and that, you know.
Were they they were considered wise, clever. Would people go to them for advice on what to do?
Probably did, you know, and like when anyone was sick, I suppose, you know, for a cure.
Yeah, very interesting. And after the tank dried up, your mother's family all were they asked to go to the new mission at Menindi, or...?
They was taken.
They were taken.
Yeah. Mm.
And have you heard any stories about that mission?
Crowra Tank.
No, Menindi.
Well, they did have places set up for them, you know. That's why they took them there.
Yeah, so it's actually mission.
It was, yeah.
And that was about... that was about in the 1930s.
30s, yeah.
And did your family, your mum and dad, enjoy life at the mission? Did they have freedom?
Yes, they used to go fishing and that, and they had a school there, and they had a medical centre there too, you know.
So they quite liked it?
Yeah. Mm.
And then a beautiful little baby girl was born called Dawn Smith.
Yeah.
Well, not Dawn Smith in those days. Dawn King.
Taylor.
And what year were you born again?
The 7th of the 10th, 1948.
48. So you were born in 48.
Yeah.
And then they had to move again, didn't they, in 49?
49, yes.
Where did they move to?
Murrumbidgee Mission.
That was a long way to go.
Yes.
Wasn't it? That's nearly, I was looking it up on a map, nearly 600 kilometres.
Yeah, it'd be about that, yeah.
And so they went from near Broken Hill, 600 kilometres. How would they have got there in those days?
On a train, a goods train.
Yeah.
Took them all.
Did you ever hear any stories about that journey?
Oh. I only know that they was all taken on a goods train, yeah.
So it wouldn't have been very comfortable.
No, it wasn't. And a lot of them, they wouldn't have been on a train before.
Yeah.
You know? Because they was in the bush.
Yeah. And it must have been very hot and no seats.
Scary for them too.
Mm. So 600 k's all the way across to Murrumbidgee, which is about 100 kilometres from Griffith. I looked this up too, and it's also... how else would you describe it, Murrumbidgee, where it is? About 100 kilometres from... Oh, I know. What's the nearby town? Near
Lake Kajaliko.
Lake Kajaliko, that's right. So how far was Lake Kajaliko from the mission?
About 9 to 10 kilometres.
So you went there as a baby, so you wouldn't have remembered the trip, but what do you remember about life at Murrumbidgee?
Going to school there. And... not going anywhere else outside the mission.
Just staying there. You wouldn't go into Lake Kajaliko.
No.
So the school was on the mission.
School was on the mission, yeah. And we had our medical centre there.
And did you have fun at school? Did you like school?
Yeah, it was good at school, yeah, learning.
Can you remember the teachers you had?
Mr. Monday.
Was he nice to you?
He was, yeah. He had children too, a girl and boy. And
how many kids were at the school? Can you remember?
Oh, there was a good few children, yeah.
20, 50?
Oh, about 50, I think. Mm.
And were they all in the one class or in separate classes?
No, we had three classrooms. The younger ones, you know. And then the ones, high school ones, you know, and then the one down a bit.
The middle ones.
Middle.
And what did you like any of the subjects that you learnt at school?
No, we didn't learn anything about our culture. It was all about Captain Cook.
Were you interested in that?
No, I wasn't. But we had to learn it because that was our, you know, we couldn't refuse.
And did you, were there any subjects that you did, like art or any of those subjects that you enjoyed?
I used to like writing and arithmetic and all that, you know. Mm.
And what games would you play at playtime or lunchtime?
Basketball, volleyball.
Did you enjoy sport?
Yeah, I used to like it when I was young, and we used to have carnivals and go, the only time we used to go on a truck to other schools, you know, like around Lake Jellicoe and places just out from Lake Jellicoe.
And did you enjoy that?
Yeah, we used to enjoy it. I used to enjoy it, yeah. Getting out of Murrin Bridge, you know, and seeing places.
And were you pretty good? Would you win a lot of the events?
Well, I wasn't too good, but a lot of the kids was, yeah.
Pretty sporty.
In our team, yeah.
And can you remember when you were that age, you know, primary school, your favourite food, or did you have any parties that you remember when you were really little?
No, I never had any parties, never had money for parties. And
it was after the war, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was, what about food? Was there plenty of food to go around? Or were there rations?
Rations. We used to live off the rations and like flour in a bag in the corner. Flour, we used to get sugar in a bag, tea leaf in a bag, and we'd get two loaves of bread.
For the week?
For the week, and a couple of chops and dripping.
And you were saying before we started this interview that the lady in charge would come and look through your cupboards to see what food was there.
The manager's wife. She used to come around once a week and check our cupboards to see if we had food and see if the place was clean.
Do you remember her name?
Mr. Snooks, he was, and his wife. Can't think of her name, Mrs. Snooks.
And was she... did you like her?
No, didn't like him or her.
Why not?
Well, they was very disrespectful towards us.
Not very pleasant.
No, not pleasant, yeah.
And along came one day... You were told that you had to leave the mission. What happened that day? Do you remember that day?
I was taken out of school. And Mum and Dad didn't give permission for me to go. It was the manager's idea, the welfare. And along with a friend of mine, Olive Parks, and Ralph Johnson. We was put on the train and sent to Sydney, not knowing where we was going or what for. And when we got to Sydney, Ralph split up with me and Olive. And first they took me to a chemist, to work in a chemist, but then they said I never had any experience, which they shouldn't have expected me to have.
How old were you?
I was 13, to work in a chemist. Putting a 13-year-old in a chemist, and, you know, what... I couldn't issue medication for people, for sick people. And they said I was had no experience for it, which they shouldn't have expected me to have. And then they took us to the old people unit there.
Where was that? Sort of an old people's village?
Yeah, old people's village, yeah.
Do you remember where that was in Sydney?
I think it was a Scotch college.
And what did you have to do there?
We had to look after old people, feed them, wash them. And I can remember too, we used to cook the breakfast porridge.
And did someone actually take you on the train for that? Because it would have been a long journey from Murrin Bridge to Sydney. Do you remember that trip?
One lady from Murrin Bridge escorted us down.
Aboriginal lady?
Aboriginal lady. And, yeah, and the matron was there waiting for us.
Where? Oh, at the...
Yeah, at the station. Or someone was there waiting for us. And the lady that escorted us down went straight back to Murrin Bridge.
Had you had a chance to say goodbye to your mum and dad?
No.
You didn't say goodbye to them?
No.
Did they want you to go?
No, they didn't.
So they didn't tell you where you were going?
Didn't know where I was going.
And did they tell your parents where you were going?
Well, I don't know if they told mum and dad, but they wasn't happy. They didn't, give advice, you know. It wasn't their idea, but there was nothing they could have done.
And how many brothers and sisters did you leave behind?
There was two younger ones than me.
Who were they?
Diane and Marlene.
And did your mum and dad didn't have any other kids at that time?
There was 14 of us, but all the others was older, you know, adults.
14 all up?
Yeah.
And had they gone off to work?
Yeah, the older ones went to work. The boys all went back around Ivanhoe working.
What were their names?
Well, there was Edward, David, Colin, the three oldest fellas, and then had another two brothers, Neil and Clary. And they used to just... they wasn't working here.
And were they... Did the same thing happen to them? Was it the Aboriginal Protection Board that came to the school and said you had to go? Did any of your other brothers and sisters have to go?
My other sister, Maureen.
When did she go?
She went nearly the same time as me. She's 2 years older than me.
And where did she go to?
They sent her out on stations working.
So did she go after you or before you?
She went before me, I think, yeah. Mm.
And what did your mum and dad say about that?
Well, same. They didn't have any, you know, input into it.
Do you remember the day she left?
Maureen, no.
So can you remember that journey on the train? It's a long way, isn't it? How long did it take you to get to Sydney?
Well, from Yabalong West to Sydney would have been on a train would have been about 10 hours, I suppose. Or...
How were you feeling when you were on the train? You didn't know where you were going.
I was crying because I didn't know where I was going, and I was, you know, and going to where I didn't know anybody. And you know, leaving mum and dad at the same time, you know, away from my mum and dad and other siblings.
And you were with your cousin?
Yeah.
Was she crying too?
She was a little bit older than me, yeah, but she wasn't crying, yeah.
And tell me what a typical day was like working in the old people's home. What would you have to do? If you woke up in the morning, what would you have to do?
Well, we had to get up and go and do our duties. Like I said, we used to cook the porridge. We used to give them breakfast, feed them. And then we'd wash them, you know, and dress them.
Was that hard work?
Well, it was, you know. We were frightened that, well, we had to do the right thing, you know. And at our age, big responsibility, you know, it was for us.
What would happen if you didn't do, if you made a mistake? Was they very strict there?
Yeah, they was, yeah.
Mm. What would they do if you made a mistake?
Well, they probably would punish us, you know, for if we would have, you know, accidentally hurt one of the old people or, you know, or done the wrong thing in other ways, you know.
And what would the punishment be?
Well, the punishment probably would have been locked up, you know, in our units.
Did that ever happen to you?
No, it didn't happen because we were too frightened, you know. We had to do the right thing.
And how long did you work there for?
I was there for about a year.
And then what did you do?
Well, they sent us home then. And when I went home, well...
Did you ask to go home? Or did they just send you home?
Send us, yeah. When I went home, Dad was sick, you know, didn't have much time with him. He passed away then, not long. And, you know, I missed out on a lot of cultural things too, you know, with Mum. Because Mum and her all sisters and that, they used to go out bushing that. And when I was younger, before I went, we used to follow him, me and my other sister Maureen, yeah.
What would your mum do when she went out bush?
Well, they used to go out hunting, yeah, digging burrows and that, you know, for rabbits and all of that, and bush medicine and that, you know.
Do you remember any of those plants or what you were given for whatever?
Yeah, I remember one because when I was about 11 year old, I had a bad infection on the leg and I was in hospital for 2 months and the hospital medication never worked on me. They was about to send me to Sydney and then Mum came in with a billy full of emu bush and bathed my leg. Emu bush and it fixed me, yeah. Yeah.
So better than the hospital?
Yeah, well, 2 months in doctors. Hospital and nothing worked on me and they was about to send me to Sydney.
And what's emu bush? Is that growing
it's
around?
It's a bush, yeah. It's all around, you know. A lot of people use it.
Around Murrin Bridge?
Yeah. And now you can buy it in creams and that, you know, emu, the cream and that.
It's kind of an antiseptic or something.
Antiseptic thing, yeah. Mm.
And did your mum ever, when you went out with your mum and the other older ladies, did they ever tell you speak their language, the Nyampa language?
They used to, yeah, talk to one another in their lingo and I learned a few things off them, yeah.
What did you learn?
Well, a few things. Well, water, they call it Kali, and snakes, Tudu, and kangaroo is Kilpitja, and eyes is Miki, and yeah, a few other things and can't.
And did you have fun going out on those hunting trips?
Yeah.
What job did you get to do? Did they give you a job?
Well, we used to just sit there, me and Maureen, and watch them digging the burrows with crowbars and it, you know. And they'd take their lunch out, a billy full of tea and damper, and, you know, they'd have their lunch even there, even when they went fishing. There'd be a big group of them walking with shovels and, crowbars. Yeah. About 7 or 8 of them, you know, and we'd follow along.
Good fun.
Good fun, yeah.
And so when you went back to live with your family back at Murrin Bridge, had things changed much over a couple of years?
Yeah, it sort of wasn't the same, you know. And I didn't stay there for long. I went with a friend down here to dead and fruit picking then. And
which is where you live now.
That's where I'm still here today, you know. I got married and had my family here.
Who did you marry?
My husband is Roland Smith.
And is he still with you?
No, he passed away now.
And how did you meet Roland?
Oh, well, my brother was down here and he was married to Roland's sister. So, you know, I lived close by, yeah.
And what did you think of Roland when you first met him?
Oh, he was a good worker, a hard worker, and I thought then, you know, he'd look after me, and which he did.
And how old were you when you met him?
Well, I was only young. I was only about 17, yeah.
And you married him then?
Married him then, yeah.
And who were your little... Who were your first children to come along?
Roland Jr. Roland John, yeah.
What can you tell me about Roland?
The young fella?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a tiny little fellow, only 5 pound. he was a lovely little baby.
And were you close to your mum and dad then, or?
Well,
were they still at Murrin Bridge?
Yeah, not long after Dad passed away.
Not long after you went back home from Sydney?
Yeah, when I had my first child, young Roland. Yeah.
And so you left your mum and dad at Murrin Bridge,
yeah.
And then you came down here to Dayton, and you had Roland. So you were pretty a long way away from your mum and dad.
Yes, I was, yeah.
From your mum.
Yeah.
Did you miss her when you were bringing up your little baby?
Yeah, I used to go back occasionally though and, you know, see her after Dad passed away, yeah.
And what did you think when you first saw that little baby looking at you?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. My own little baby. He was lovely, you know.
And who is the next one to come along?
Grace Ann.
And tell me a little bit about Grace Ann.
Yeah, she's same chubby little thing she was.
And did she get on well with Roland?
Yeah, that was good. He liked his sister, Roland.
And the next one?
Carol.
Can you tell me about Carol?
Same as Carol. She was a chubby little thing. Well, the other two get on well with her.
And so were you working when you were bringing up these little babies?
No, I wasn't.
What was your husband doing, Roland?
Roland was doing block work.
Working on the grapes?
Working on the grapes. And his income was block work and spotlight and rabbits was our living.
So that was what you got to eat, the rabbits?
He'd get a couple of rabbits out every second day for us to eat. And he'd get a bit of money, you know, just to keep us going, yeah.
So who else came along after Carol? Any more?
Bruce, yeah, he was a chubby little fella too, Bruce.
And did they all get on
they
well?
They were all as lovely babies.
Did they play together?
Yes.
Mm. Do you remember any funny stories about them as they were growing up?
Well, Bruce, or about two of my young ones, they'd always have a habit of putting things in their mouth. And Bruce gave me the biggest fright one day. He put a bottle top in his mouth and he was choking on it. Gave me the biggest fright. And Bruce used to hold his breath a lot when he'd cry. Give me a fright in that. A couple of times I'd see him laying there, or he used to frighten me. But
and
he's
what did you do with the bottle top? How did you get that out?
Oh, his father put his hand in there and all the job, yeah.
Pulled it out.
And then another fellow after him was David. Same thing happened to him one day, and he gave me a big fright too. He came run inside gargling because he had a marble.
Marble. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I give him a couple of flat stamps in the back. And
pats on the back.
And it just dropped out.
Oh, they worry you, those kids.
Yeah, they do when they're small. But they were all happy kids and that, you know, they were
together.
Happy kids and, yeah.
Any other children?
After
David?
Then there was Rose. Yeah, and she was my youngest daughter.
Little baby.
Yeah, and I lost her.
Oh, how did she die? She dies a little baby. It's very sad. And
about 4 years ago she passed away.
Oh.
Rental failure. She was on dialysis.
Oh, no. Very sad.
Mm. She left five children.
Tough. And do you look after some of those children?
They're around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they live around here?
Yeah, they're independent. Yeah.
Mm. They're grown up now.
Yeah, yeah. Only the youngest fella, he's about 14.
Hard for them.
Yeah. Mm.
Hard for you.
Yeah.
So now do you see a lot of your kids and your grandkids and your great
grandkids?
They're
all, you don't mind, I just...
Yeah.
They're all...
Do you want to have a little break?
Yeah.
Yeah.